Welcome, everybody. We're about to get started. Over 100,000 apps in the Windows Phone Store today. How can you make your app stand out? Good morning, everyone. Stefan Wick, QA Manager on Windows Phone. Today, I want to talk to you about five critical developer practices that will help you turn your working app into a high-quality app in the Windows Phone Store so that you can increase your ratings, your reviews, your downloads, and ultimately your revenue for your apps. These are the five topics I want to talk to you about today, and I would like to make this as practical as possible for you guys, so I won't be spending too much time in the PowerPoint. Instead, I want to show you how to apply these techniques in the real world on real code to show you how to increase the quality of your apps. So for that purpose, I have created a small sample app. It's working great on my machine. It passed certification. Now it's in the store, but it's not doing that great. So let's take a quick look at that and see if we can figure out what's wrong. So here's my little app. It's running in my Windows Phone 8 emulator here. It's really a very simple app. It consumes the feeds from our dev center, similar to the web interface that we have here. So it allows developers to kind of stay in touch what's going on in the dev center. So seems to be working great. But now when I go into my dashboard for my app, on our dev center where I can get all the information how my app is doing in the store, and I get the download counts, the ratings and reviews, I see people are not particularly thrilled with my app, so I get kind of an average rating of 2, and people are complaining the app sometimes exits, it's kind of sluggish, and for this one person at least it doesn't work at all. So clearly, users are not happy. Something's wrong with my app. Maybe there are even crashes, between the lines of some of these reviews. So let's take a look what we can do to help this. My team actually had a chance over the last couple of months to do a ton of crash analysis for third-party apps in our Windows Phone 7 store. And we did this as part of our app compat testing efforts for Windows Phone 8. We wanted to make sure all the Windows Phone 7 apps work on the Windows Phone 8 OS. So we did a lot of structured, rigorous testing on many of those apps. And aside from finding all these compatibility issues that we were after, we also saw a good number of crashes that were just straight up bugs in the app code that happened regardless of the operating system version. And when we tracked them down in our live Watson database, we saw there are actually a lot of retail users out there that are using these apps, that are hitting these crashes very frequently over long periods of time. So clearly, there are missed opportunities for the developers who own these apps. That there are ways that they could significantly improve the customer satisfaction here by staying on top of these crashes. So let me take a look what can you do better to not get into the same situation. There are several ways for you to track your crashes once your app is in the store. You will get directly in the dev center in your dashboards, you will get crash reports. Those will get updated fairly frequently every couple of days, so you get a really good view of how the stability of your apps is currently doing out there in the wild. You can do even better if you want, like more kind of real-time data, more customized context, and more data about the crashes. You can also use some third-party analytics products. There are some fine offerings out there that really do a good job to deliver even more data to help you do a better job. And then certainly you can also kind of roll your own kind of little Watson service, bake it into your app. Basically, how that would work is you trap any unhandled exceptions in your application. You store all the data you care about locally, and then next time when the user launches your app, you can ask him, hey, there was a problem. Do you want to tell me about it? You want to send me an email or upload to my server? This is also, by the way, a great way for you to connect with your customers and then follow up with them directly and help them through their problems. So these are all things that you can do kind of reactively after the crashes have already happened. But ideally, you'd want to be ahead of the game and prevent these kind of problems up front in your development process as you build and test your apps. So for that, it's really useful to kind of know what are some of the common problems and common reasons for crashes that we are seeing as we analyze our backend data. So first of all, I want to say the list of reasons is long and it's diverse, and you know every app has their own little reasons for crashing. But there are at least three common groups that we're seeing over and over again in many apps across all segments, across all types of apps. And one is apps not handling exceptions in their networking handlers. So when phones go in and out of range of connectivity, your app should be robust against that and handle it properly instead of just crashing. Also, we're seeing a lot of out-of-memory exceptions in the back end. So apps that are having object lifetime issues or apps that are not using appropriate resources or appropriate image assets, you know, for a mobile application are often reasons for that. And last but not least, apps that are not handling diverse user input properly. Format exception is one example here. Oftentimes it's seen in an international context where maybe you have built an app for an English-speaking market, you only tested it in English-speaking scenarios, and someone uses it in a different market, and your app is not able to handle international number formats or date formats. Very, very common reasons for crashes we are seeing. So let's take a look at kind of a real-world example and how we can first fix it, but also prevent it kind of long-term. So let me switch back to my laptop here. And so in my dashboard for my app, I can now go to my reports so I can figure out what my crashes are. So I can go to my crash count, and I will see, there's definitely some crash activity here happening in the last couple of days. And so something I want to look at and figure out what's going on. So I can download my exception stack traces here. I've already downloaded it here. So this is kind of the raw report that you get. It's not very pretty. It's really raw. But it has a lot of useful information for you to consume that will help you do a better job and fix your app. So first thing we see, there's a variety of different exception types, but I'm already seeing my three little friends here again from the previous slide. These are the exceptions that also my app is hitting, and those are the counts from the most recent days. So clearly there's a problem with these three things. There's a number of one-off issues here as well that have kind of one count in a month. I'll probably not focus on that too much right now. But let's start with the web exception here and try to drill a little bit deeper. I also get the stack trace of my crash here in the report, so I can expand that and look at this in more detail. If I walk this down from the top, there's first some internal platform code, but here's the first kind of symbol that looks familiar to me. It points to my code. And so apparently I have a network response callback that is calling into NGET response, and that ultimately ends up in an exception and crashes my app. So this is something I want to follow up on and take a look what's going on in my code. So let me find that symbol in my code. So it was in the forum thread class, and here it is, my method network response callback. And so this is a callback that's called by the platform when the response comes back from the network, and then I'm supposed to deal with the result. And here I'm calling at get response. And those of you familiar with networking APIs, you can spot already, okay, I'm not doing any kind of error handling here. And if the server is down or there's no connectivity, then this is supposed to throw an exception. If I'm not handling it, you know, my app will exit and the user will be frustrated. So, you know, pretty easy problem to fix. But I want to, before I go and fix it, I want to actually understand a little bit more how could I have done better and how could I have prevented this as part of my development and my testing process before I even submit the app to the marketplace and make my user frustrated with these kind of crashes. So first thing I want to show here is a new tool that we have integrated into Visual Studio with the Windows Phone 8 SDK. This is our simulation dashboard. It is a little tool that allows you to simulate some real-world conditions, you know, while you're testing your app, and helps you, you know, find some of these bugs. So, let me exit and restart my app here. Because I remember I actually tested my app in airplane mode, so to make sure it actually works when, or it doesn't crash when there's no network. And I know it's also part of the certification testing. But what it doesn't cover is the situation where, you know, maybe you are on a bus ride, you have connectivity when you start, and then while you use the app, you lose connectivity, and that's when it crashes. So with the simulation dashboard, you can now kind of simulate this kind of situation more easily and integrate that into your testing workflow. So let me start my app here in the debugger. And so I have networking access here, so I can drill into the posts and all that. But now, going back to my dashboard, where did it go? Here it is. Now I can go ahead and enable a networking simulation. So let me bring back the emulator. And here I can select different networking speeds, different signal strengths. And so I want to go all the way to no network and apply this. So now when I go next and try to drill in, there should be no network, and I can test these code paths under that condition. While we're waiting for this to time out, real quick, there are some other things you can do. For example, you can bring down the lock screen and unlock. That's another kind of common scenario where, you know, your app might have to do special things to respond to these conditions. So now, you know, we've hit the timeout on the networking request, and I'm actually broken into the debugger exactly at the point where the stack trace told me ahead of time, and it points me to the problem. So this is one way how I could have caught it in my testing before I submit it to the store, and this is a tool we've now integrated into Visual Studio to make this easier. This is also to kind of send reminders to your app. That's another kind of thing that helps testing these common real world scenarios where your app kind of gets obscured by other UI and then comes back. So this is a great way to test my app. You know, once it's ready, I can do that. But I want to do actually even one better than that, and I will, before I fix it, I will use that as a segue to kind of the next topic that I want to cover, and that is unit testing. Wouldn't it be lovely if I could just write an automated test for this scenario, you know, before I even write my code for my networking callback? Write tests, you know, for valid data, for invalid data, for not connected states, and so on and so forth. And then as I write my actual code, I get the validation right up front, if I'm doing it right and if I'm doing a good job. So this way I can prevent these bugs from the get-go. So let's take a look at that a little bit. So in the Windows Phone 8 toolkit that we've released yesterday, in addition to the Windows Phone 8 SDK, we've actually now integrated the test framework. We're also making it available as an update to the Windows Phone 7 toolkit, so you can use it also for testing your Windows Phone 7 applications. And so this gives you a way to write automated tests as part of your development process. And I'm probably or hopefully preaching to the choir here about, you know, why automated tests. But automated tests gives you, you know, a really nice approach to structured quality control. You can do test-driven development and bake this right in your development workflow. In addition, it also helps you prevent and catch regressions, you know, whenever you kind of go and, you know, update your app or refactor some of your things. You know, you can catch regressions that way. And it will help you test more configurations in less time. And this is actually very important, and I will come back to that a little bit later. You know, as you increase the scope of your app and increase the reach of your app, actually covering multiple configuration in your testing will become more and more important. So let's do a little demo on the unit testing. So I want to start with basics, and then I go back to my little networking problem and kind of write a new test to cover that. So in my solution here, I'm not sure if you can see that on the right, it's probably pretty small. I have my app project and a secondary project that contains the tests for my app. So this is a separate project, but it operates on my app project and tests you know, my code. Let's first look at, you know, some, you know, really basic Hello World examples here. So those are kind of the two types of tests that that on a basic level are supported. One is a synchronous test, the other is an asynchronous test. And if you're familiar with unit testing, so there's nothing new or nothing special here to know about. This is just, you know, a straight test where I'm verifying some condition, and in the second case, I'm executing code asynchronously and validated there, and then I have to tell the framework, you know, once the test is complete. So let's take a look at how that can be run in the emulator or on your phone. So I'm setting my test project as the startup project. I will go ahead and deploy it to my emulator. And here we go. So this is my test project. And so this is the kind of standard UI of the framework that comes up. And so you can filter your tests if you have a lot of tests, you don't want to run them all at the same time. And so I will just run all my tests because I only have 5 right now. And so here are my examples. One kind of failed, which was kind of expected. And I can drill into my failures and see, you know, what is wrong, where it failed, and so on and so forth. I can also email the results or save them locally to process them later. And you know, then I have other tests here that are grouped kind of by the class and the method. So let's take a look how we can write a new test that actually does something useful for my application. So I have some functional tests here, and I want to go ahead and add a new test to this. Okay, here we go. So let's write a new test here. And because you don't want to see me writing, I will just get it from the toolbox here. So this is a new test. And you can write this test, and you probably want to write this test before you even write your code. So this is a test that will verify my network response callback. And in this case, I want to call it with valid data. So I have captured some you know, some valid thread data in an XML file from a previous networking call, and I will feed that in and make sure, you know, I get the posts properly sorted out. And so to do that, I create a mock object that basically simulates the platform object that we get back from a networking call, and so that will contain my valid data. And I can do my test here. Now I want to do the same also for the not connected state. basically almost the same test, except that I create, you know, my mock web result in a special kind of not connected state, so it knows to kind of give you the same error behavior as the real not connected scenario. So now I want to go ahead and deploy these new tests to my emulator and rerun my tests. So now I have 7 tests because I added 2. And so here are my 2 tests. So valid data, that passed, but my not connected test pass actually failed, and it failed with exactly the web exception that, you know, has been haunting my customers. Now I can catch it in my unit test, you know, before I even go ahead and write my app. So now it's time, you know, for me to fix the bug, because now I have the test case and the regression coverage that I wanted. And let me go ahead and fix this real quick. So I'll add some error handling here. I want to make sure I catch the web exception. And so there goes some error handling. And so I will rebuild my app. And now I can redeploy my tests. So now I run them, and as you can see, my test passes, and I'm good to go. And now this method will, you know, no longer fail in the future, because I have the regression coverage. I will verify it, you know, on every build and every change I make. Okay, so that's unit testing. And going back to the slides, the next topic on my list is memory and performance. Clearly, on mobile devices, memory and performance is a very important topic. Right after, you know, you make sure your app doesn't crash, making sure it performs well and doesn't run out of memory is probably the next big thing for you to look at. So, because it's really the thing that you know makes the difference between having a good app and a great outstanding app. The expectations of the users are certainly high there, because you know, the users expect, you know, your app to behave similar, you know, as the first party experience or as some of the top apps that are in the store today and that they use and love every day. So that's what they compare you with, and that's kind of the bar you want to meet. In the tools, we give you a couple of profiling options and tools that you can use to, you know, really get to the bottom of your performance problems. And we also have updated the store test kit with the Windows Phone 8 SDK. It also gives you a very kind of convenient, simple way to run kind of the performance basics against your app before you actually submit it to the store. It will give you a report, tell you kind of what some of the red flags might be, and it will help you prevent certification failures, for example, around slow startup times and things like that. So overall, performance, you know, is such an important and such a big topic for mobile applications that it really deserves its own session. And so that's what I want to highlight here. So tomorrow, I think in the morning, you might want to look it up, there is a dedicated talk about performance. Oren Nachman, who is our fantastic performance engineer on the team, he will give an excellent talk about performance, and he will, you know, dive deep into all these profilers and all the things that you need to know about performance. For right now, I actually want to spend a couple of minutes and dig into memory considerations, closely related and very important on your mobile app. You know, whatever you do, always make sure you monitor the memory usage of your app, because, you know, resources are very limited. And on Windows Phone 8, we now actually enforce the memory caps strictly. So that's a bit of a change from Windows Phone 7, where we had kind of a guideline of, 90 megabytes, but it wasn't enforced strictly. If you went a little bit over and there was still memory available in the system, we didn't kill you right away. Now on Windows Phone 8, we give you 150 megabytes in the on 512 megabyte devices, but we do enforce it strictly at that point. So once you hit it, the system will shut you down. So very important to monitor that. And Oren will also talk a little bit more about that, all the details you need to know about low memory, high memory devices, and you know what the caps are and how to deal with that. Also very important when you test, test with real world data. If you're building a social networking application, you probably don't want to test with an account that only has one friend. You know, test it with an account that has 200 friends, and that's how you probably find some problems. And also, monitor your heavy objects, more carefully. You might not care about some event arcs, being allocated and not released. But if you're seeing that, your page objects or your image elements are not getting garbage collected and are hanging around, then, that's probably a telltale sign that, something is wrong in your app and you should figure out how to address it. And so one thing to remember in that context is that even, one UI control in your page can actually cause the entire page's visual tree to be leaked because, it keeps its parent alive, that parent keeps its parent alive and so on. So the entire tree might stay around, and if there's a ton of images and things like that, it can be very expensive for your app and lead to a sudden death at some point. So I actually want to look at that example a little bit more closely in my next demo and show you how you can identify these kind of problems with our profiling tools and how you can fix it. So let me go back here to my application. And first, I just want to start it normally under the debugger and kind of show you. Oh, that's not what I want to launch. Let me switch gears here. So, stop the debugger. And I want to start this guy. Okay, here we go. So in my app, when run under the debugger, I've added, a little, one line helper that tells me in my about page, what's my current memory. And so out of the gate, I'm about 10 megabytes heavy, so that's probably okay. So now I want to go ahead and use my app a little bit. I was still running with the networking turned off, so now we're back. So I want to use my app a little bit, drill into a thread here, and now I come back, and oh wow, my memory has almost tripled, or it has tripled, and so let me repeat this again to see if there's some kind of pattern. And sure enough, now I'm already at 40 megabytes, and it will be only a question of time once I hit my 150 megabyte cap, and at that point the system will shut me down. The app will get an out of memory exception, and that's what my users have been seeing in the real world, and that's what's showing in my crash reports. So clearly there's a problem here, and I will go ahead and use our memory profiler to get to the bottom of what's going on here. So in the debug menu, I will start Windows Phone performance analysis, and I will just modify some settings here so that the data will come out quite visually. And so this will launch my app now under the profiler, and I will go ahead and just kind of repeat the same sequence now with the profiler enabled, and browse a couple of threads here to produce some data for the profiler to chew on. So now when I exit my application, the profiler automatically, gets an event and copies all the data from my device or from the emulator in this case over to my desktop computer, and now Visual Studio parses the log file. In the log file, we have captured all the allocations and all the garbage collections that were happening on the device while I was profiling. So that's a lot of data, and so it'll take a minute to get that. So that's how you know it is live. And maybe I should also have some commercial interruption at that point, but it should be done in just a second. No, you can't profile background tasks at this point. What you could do is, the question was from the audience, can you profile background tasks? And the answer is no, currently with the profiler you can't do it. But what you might want to consider is take the code that you run in your background task, put it in a foreground app, and then run it there with the profiler. That should give you the kind of same data, and you can analyze the problem there. Okay, so analysis is done, and here's what this looks like. Let me change this a little bit. So clearly, I'm seeing memory goes up and goes up and goes up and never goes back down again. So that looks like a big problem. I've hit the 50 megabyte mark, even with my very simple test here. So let's dig into kind of a segment here to analyze that a little bit and figure out what might be the problem. So I can look at my heap here, and this will tell me what are kind of all the objects that are retained at the end of my period here. And this will give me a long list of things. But if I sort it in the right way, it will actually give me some very helpful hints to the root of the problem. So here, first I'm seeing, okay, the biggest culprit seems to be some int array instances. So that is by far the biggest offender, with 27 megabytes or something like that. But int array is pretty generic. It doesn't really tell me, what's the problem in my app. So, but I can dig into this and figure out, what are the methods that actually allocated these int arrays. And so here I'm seeing, obviously, some writable bitmaps are allocating all these big int arrays. And also I'm seeing here highlighted, this part is my code versus all the other code is platform code. So I can actually click here, and this will take me to the place in my code where the writable bitmap is created. So. But this in itself is not really the problem or the bug, because I've designed my control to use a writable bitmap, and there's nothing wrong with that. But maybe the problem is that there are too many of these controls, and they don't get collected. So let me dig into that a little bit, and I will resort the types so I can find my own types here. And here's my post control. And so the post control in my app should really only ever be alive when I'm looking at a post. And as soon as I navigate away, it should just become eligible for garbage collection, and it should disappear from the heap. But apparently that's not what's happening. I have 12 instances here, and so something seems to be wrong. So here I can list and filter down to all my instances. I'm going to go ahead and sort them by create time, because I want to know, the oldest one of these, this one should really not be alive, and I want to know why it's still alive. So I can ask the profiler to tell me, hey, what are the roots for this object? What's holding on to it? And it will tell me kind of what some of these things are. And this is kind of where, you know, it becomes, you know, more of an art than a science to kind of really read the data correctly. So because in many real world cases, you know, there are multiple things that still have a reference to it. Of course, the grid, which is its parent, has a reference, but the tool already identified it as a weak reference. And then there is another. This is kind of an internal reference that that the runtime holds to all its controls. So you will see this one on every control that you look at in the profiler. But then there is a third one, and this one looks suspicious. And this is the status updated handler, you know, which is defined in my own code. So this is the one that I want to follow up on. And so I will go back to my types here, and I can find the status updated handler here, and it also has 12 instances. No surprise there. And I can find out from the profiler, you know, where is this guy allocated from in my code. Again, it points me to my post control. And here I can kind of spot the problem that I create a delegate for a static event that is defined kind of centrally in my application. And, you know, I'm not unsubscribing from it ever. I'm not using any sort of weak event patterns that would kind of automatically unsubscribe. So this one will stick around statically in my app for the lifetime of my app and will always keep a reference to this event handler, which will then in turn keep my control alive, and that control will then keep its parent alive and its entire page alive. And this is what's causing, you know, the massive memory problem in my application. So again, easy fix. I can just go ahead and unsubscribe when the control gets unloaded, and this should fix it. But again, before I do this, I will actually try to kind of do it the right way and add an automated test for this problem that I should have added all along. And now with that, I have, you know, a much better long-term solution to the problem. So here we'll add another test to my unit test suite, which basically just adds and removes my control to my application and verifies that it becomes eligible for garbage collection. So you have to kind of read this a little bit backwards. So I create the control and I add it to my test panel here. And then, you know, once it's loaded, I remove it again. And then once it's unloaded, I check if it's still alive. So it's very simple. So let me see how that looks when I run it. Here are my tests. And so here we see the test failed. The control has not been garbage collected. So this is a test for the problem that identifies it. And now when I go ahead and fix it, so to fix it, I want to unsubscribe from the event whenever my post control gets unloaded. So rebuild my app, redeploy my test, and so now when I rerun it, we should see everything's green. Add remove control test passed. All right, so much about memory. Going back to slides, I want to talk next about building world-ready apps. What does that mean? You know, building apps for a global marketplace, building apps for users throughout the world, and really, it kind of you know, means two basic things, you know, that will help you increase your reach and also, you know, your ratings for your app, because you don't want to limit yourself to, you know, just your local market. So there are two things you want to do. And first of all, you want to make sure you avoid common coding mistakes in kind of a global ecosystem. And the simple thing for that to do is, you know, just, you know, run your tests not only in your local language, but also, you know, switch your phone or your emulator to a different language. You know, run your tests there and see how it works. Also, you know, include, you know, different language input, you know, from various locales. The second thing, and this is more kind of a consider, not it doesn't apply to all applications, but, you know, consider localizing your app content and your UI, so you make it more appealing to other markets as well. And with the new Windows Phone 8 SDK and the Visual Studio 2012, we're actually making it a lot easier to go through that process of localizing your UI and your content. And I want to show this also in kind of a quick demo here. So going back to my demo machine. So I want to kind of look at my main page in my little application here. Actually, before I do this, I want to run it in a non-English environment. So for that, I've actually started a second instance of the emulator here, and I've booted it into German. That's kind of a very easy way to do now with the new SDK. We allow you to run multiple instances of the emulator at the same time, so you can easily, you know, have, you know, a Chinese emulator and a French emulator, and, you know, one in the light theme, one in the dark theme. Kind of add more variations to your testing, you know, while you develop. So in this case, I've set up my second emulator as a German machine, and it. It's also using the light theme, so I can validate my UI in that setting as well. So what I want to do is now deploy my app to this emulator. And I also want to go ahead and deploy my tests to the German emulator as well. So here is my app, and I want to launch it. And you see what happens. Nothing happens. The app doesn't even launch. Wow. And let me see how my tests are doing here on this machine. So there is one of my unit tests that fails here. It passed fine. It was all green on English. But now when I try on German, it actually you know, finds a problem. And obviously, there is a problem because my app doesn't even launch. So let's run the app under the debugger so we can figure out, you know, what's the problem and how can we fix it. So I'm hitting F5. And so here we go. It breaks right into here on startup. There is a format exception. And so if I look into this, I'm not sure if you can read it. So there is a date, you know, being passed in. Date for 10/25/2012. So 10/25/2012 from a, you know, on a German machine, it means it's the 10th day of the 25th month. So that's not gonna parse well, and so that's why we're getting the exception. So this is, you know, just kind of a very kind of, you know, simple mistake that you can easily make, you know, as you consume data from one source and parse it on like different locales. It may not work everywhere the same way. So the fix in this case is simple. You know, you just need to be aware of, you know, what the culture is of your data, and if you know the culture, you know, is always the same, you know, you can just use the invariant culture. And now when I hit F5 again, my app comes up. It looks fine. And also, if I now redeploy my test, I can run them on the German system, and everything passes here as well. So that's kind of another thing to kind of emphasize. You know, once you have your unit tests, you know, run them on the multiple configurations. It will help you find these bugs up front, and you don't get into the situation where you submit to the marketplace and it goes, you know, out globally, and then you get some of these reviews like I did, where there are people saying, oh, the app doesn't even work, it doesn't even launch, right? You can catch those up front. So the second part here of the, you know, building for world ready is, you know, how can you make your app content and app UI actually localized? And so I want to kind of walk through that real quick and show you what the new tools are doing here for this. Because I know in Windows Phone 7 tooling, this was, you know, a little bit of a hassle and not exactly straightforward to do. Now, in my Windows Phone 8 project here, and this is pretty much, you know, how it comes out of the box when you do file new project, you know, what you get is you automatically get kind of a resource dictionary that is set up to kind of take care of all the strings in your projects that you ever want to localize now or in the future. So you could put them all here, and it has a kind of a little helper, which is really just two lines of code that will build you the conduit that that allows you to data bind to that resource dictionary from your XAML and also from your code. So now let's look at my main page here. And here I have a few strings. The first one here is the name of my application, and probably it's okay. I don't need to change that. This would work in any language. But for the title of my page, this might be something I don't want to hard code, and I actually want to change that dynamically at runtime depending on what language I'm running on. So instead of hard coding the text, I'm just setting up a binding that refers to the entry in the dictionary, and then automatically it will pull out the right string. So this is how you do it in XAML. Now, not all your code or all your UI is created in XAML. You know, sometimes you create UI in code as well, and it works here the exact same way. So here I have an application bar in my app that I'm building in code, and so the button text is something I want to localize for my different languages. And here, instead of hard coding the text, I will just refer to the appropriate entry in the resource dictionary. So okay, so now everything's still English here. So what do I do? Let me localize my app now into German. So I'm selecting German here as a supported culture. Now when I hit save, what happens here in the Solution Explorer, I get a second resource dictionary. So I can open that, and it's a straight copy of my English one, except that the resource language is set to German, and you know, if it were a right to left language, it would also set the flow direction, because now in Windows Phone 8 we also support, you know, a much larger number of languages around the world, including some of the right to left languages like Hebrew and Arabic, and for those, you know, we set the flow direction to right to left. But in German it's left to right, and so now I can go ahead and translate my strings to German, and in German pretty much all words are kind of twice as long as the German as the English ones. So I'm gonna, you know, use maybe just info for this one. So so this takes care of that, and now when I go ahead and run this, hopefully in the right emulator, yeah, it's coming up in the German emulator. And now it's picking up the German translation here for the title, and as well as down here for the app bar. And so when I go back and bring it over to my other emulator that's still running on US English, I get still my original English string, And same down here for the app bar. So things are happening dynamically, automatically, and it's really easy to you know, do this workflow as part of your development. So the last topic for today is upgrading from Windows Phone 7 to Windows Phone 8. So if you have existing 7 applications today out there in the store, and now you want to go ahead and run them on your Windows Phone 8, or you know, you want your customers to run them on Windows Phone 8, so there are a couple of things you want to know about. First of all, Windows Phone 8 is designed to run all your Windows Phone 7 applications. So we have a Quirks Mode shim running in Windows Phone 8 that you know provides all the you know same APIs that you had in 7, and so by design apps will run. Of course, we changed the entire operating system, and there are you know some subsystems you know where you know the thread scheduling or some you know some of the timing might have changed. So it's a good idea if you have an existing app, you know, test it on your Windows Phone 8 device, test it in the Windows Phone 8 emulator that comes with the tools to make sure you know you're not making any kind of assumptions in your code that are specific about you know thread scheduling or you know things of that nature. Important to note, you know, with the new Windows Phone 8 SDK, we're actually shipping a superset of the Windows Phone 7 SDK, so you have all the same ability to, you know, to continue to build your 7 app and to build your 8 app at the same time. You get still the 7 emulator as well as the 8 emulator, so you can, you know, test them in both emulators at the same time. So by default, you know, you don't have to change your app, you know, but it's a good idea to test. However, you know, there's a lot of very exciting features in the Windows Phone 8 operating system and the developer platform, and so you might want to consider some feature light up in your Windows Phone 7 application, even if you don't want to go all the way, you know, to you know build a new Windows Phone 8 app right now. You know, you can consider late binding to some of those features when you detect you're running on a device that that has these new features. You know, you can use some of those. Potential ideas here would be for, you know, in-app purchase, for example, or, you know, using some of the new tile features, you know, from your existing application. And then, of course, the third upgrade path here is here, you know, where you actually take your source code and do a full upgrade to 8.0. And so this way you will be able to take full advantage of all new platform features. You also will be able to take advantage of all the perf improvements that we've done in the platform for 8.0 applications. So in that scenario, you are no longer running on the compatibility shim. You know, you're running directly on the Windows Phone 8 platform, and you know get all the benefits from that. But you should read and consider the upgrade guidance on MSDN for that. So once you've done, you know, the source code upgrade to 8.0, you know, you will be subject to some breaking changes in the platform that we have documented. Those typically are kind of very subtle changes in API behavior, and we've typically quirked those so that your existing 7 application will not see these changes. But when you opt in to 8.0, you know, you will see the changes because we think that those are changes for the better, and I will point out an example in just a minute. There will be different screen sizes that we support on Windows Phone 8, so you'll get a chance to, you know, to opt into that and to optimize for that. That's something to consider. And also, our controls have slightly updated visuals to kind of match the kind of the new themes that we have in the first party experiences. Very important, you know, after upgrading to 8.0, retest all your code paths in your application, because as I said, there are subtle breaking changes across the platform, and you want to make sure you don't depend on any of those. And again, here, you know, your investments in unit tests will pay off, you know, if you already have a good suit, you can just, you know, run them after your upgrade, and it might help catch some of those problems. So once you've done that step and you've upgraded to 8.0, now it's important to think a little bit about code sharing between, you know, your 7.1 project and your new 8.0 project, because your existing customers who still have the Windows Phone 7 devices, you know, when they go to the store, they will still receive your existing 7.1 Zap that you had submitted before. They will not get the 8.0 Zap because it can't work on their devices. So in that sense, you have two versions of your Zap out there in the store, and you may want to, you know, continue maintaining and updating them. You know, if there's a bug fix you want to make in 7.1, or if you want to add new features that should be available for both your, you know, your 7.1 and your 8.0 customers. So, you know, once you do the upgrade, you know, you want to find your approach that is right for your scenario, that helps you maintain these two different versions of the application without, like, completely duplicating your code and making every code change twice. So there are different approaches that you can consider, and, you know, some of it is, you know, personal preference, or, you know, it may depend on the type of the project. But you could have basically one app project that essentially has two different configurations that compile the same code, you know, once as a 7.1 and once as an 8.0 application. This might work well if, you know, both versions are, like, almost the same and the deltas are really minimal. Another approach you could take is, you know, if, for example, you decide to kind of rewrite your UI for 8.0 and, you know, keep the 7.1 like as it is, and you might want to consider creating two app projects, and that just have kind of a shared library for, you know, your business logic and things like that are common. This is kind of the other extreme that you would maybe choose if, you know, there's a lot of changes you want to do for 8.0. And then kind of the third, which kind of my personal preference, is also very kind of flexible and, you know, is kind of a nice engineering approach in my mind, is where you kind of leverage source control to create two branches of your project. And this way you have two distinct copies, one for 7.1, one for 8.0, but they have a relationship in the source control system, so you can easily merge any changes, you know, in the right direction. So you could do all your 7.1 updates and bug fixes and feature work in the 7.1 branch, and then merge it into 8.0, and all the specific 8.0 changes you only do in the 8.0 branch. So kind of works well for me. And this is going to be my last demo before we run out of time. And so I will show you how to upgrade the project that I've been using, make it an 8.0 project, and then also share the code from there going forward. So I will go ahead and go into my source control explorer in Visual Studio. And so here's my project for 7.1, and I will go ahead and create a new branch. Actually, let me give it a meaningful name here. So this will be my branch for Windows Phone 8. So what this will do is essentially, you know, create an exact copy of my code, and so I will download that now from my source control server. And so now I can open my copy here. It's still, you know, a 7.1 app, but I can now, you know, go ahead and make changes here without affecting my 7.1 project. And the nice thing is that every file in this project still has a direct relationship to the 7.1 version of the same file. So now the upgrade is really simple. In my Solution Explorer, I will just go ahead and select Upgrade to Windows Phone 8 for each of my projects. So this is for my tests, and the same for my app. And to be clear, you don't have to do it for all your projects. You could choose to, you know, leave some of your library projects on 7.1, so it's not mandatory that all projects in the solution need to be upgraded. But in my case, it makes sense because I want my test to also run on 8.0. So now it's 8.0, and now I can actually go ahead and add some 8.0 features, and I will just do a very quick one where I don't have to write any code. So I want to support large tiles for my application, and so here I will select the tile, and now I can go ahead and run my brand new 8.0 version of my app, and something failed. Oh, I'm still debugging the other one. Okay, I'll do this again, F5. So this is now my 8.0 app, so nothing to see here yet. It just kind of works. Okay, now I have multiple, but I think it's this one. So when I pin this to the start menu, I can now see, I have a white tile. And so this is kind of the first 8.0 feature that I have enabled for my app after the upgrade. So so that's the upgrade. Now, just to kind of reiterate this, from a code sharing perspective, in my source control explorer, I can now manage the two versions of my app very easily. When I make fixes to my 7.1 app, I can easily integrate them via merge into my 8.0 app, and this way I can make sure they stay in sync and I can get the most value out to my customers. Okay, so we're pretty much out of time. So I want to real quick recap kind of what we covered here today. So with my application, now the crashes are fixed. We have implemented unit tests for more regression control. We have improved the memory and performance. We made the app ready for the world. And we made the app also ready for Windows Phone 8. So hopefully, with these changes in my app, I now, can go back and hopefully receive some better reviews from my customers. So we'll see about that. So that's all I have. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. And I also would like to remind you to fill out the evaluations if you can. Thanks very much.